WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. In the 1990s, Chicago was home to companies like Softsheen, Johnson Products, and Namaste Laboratories that made hair relaxers popular with Black women. Decades later, Chicago's connection to these products is in the spotlight once again. But this time it's because thousands of Black women who used those hair relaxers are suing these companies, saying the products weren't safe and gave them cancer. And the cases have been consolidated in front of a single federal judge in Chicago. Tracy Love of Oak Park had to have a hysterectomy after years of using hair relaxers. I sat down with her and two of our colleagues to learn more. Andy Grimm is a court reporter who's covering this case for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Natalie Moore is WBEZ's Race, Class, and Communities editor. I started by asking Natalie about her experience with using hair relaxers.
I was nine, and it was big family discussion about whether I should get a perm relaxer. You know, we use those terms interchangeably.
Right.
I used to get my hair pressed with a hot comb. I had a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Super thick. And finally, it was seen as a maintenance issue, not so much, oh, your hair has to be straight and silky, but I guess to kind of tame it.
Yes. Make it more manageable,
as
people like to say.
Yes.
Yeah, I was tender-headed, and so I was actually excited for the hair appointment. I remember like counting down, like, oh, my hair appointment's coming. I'm going to get a perm. And I was just really happy for the relief because I just did not like my mom combing my hair. I just always was in pain because my hair was so thick. My curls, especially at the back, were very thick. So that was just a monumental moment for me. But fast forward, and I've kind of gone through a love-hate journey with these relaxers. And so it sounds, Andy, like this is sort of a similar case for a lot of the women here in this federal suit here in Chicago. So talk to us about how many plaintiffs are involved here with the federal case and what exactly they're alleging.
Sure. So we've got roughly 8,500 plaintiffs in the federal cases. These are folks from across the country. The cases have all been consolidated in front of a single judge in Chicago to deal with, like, you know, common issues to these thousands of cases. And the story is women start using these products and oftentimes continue to use them for decades. And they believe that it has led to illnesses ranging from uterine fibroids to uterine cancers. And a lot of this is linked to a recent study that showed that there is this much higher incidence of uterine cancer. There are also lawsuits filed here in Cook County, a few dozen by women that are from Chicago area and outside the Chicago area, and then state courts, you know, across the country. There's dozens, hundreds more cases.
Oh, wow. Yeah, really involved. Tell us the products that are specifically being targeted, Natalie.
So with the relaxers, and not all of them are at-home kits, but the relaxers are a cream, and you put this cream on the new growth of your hair to get those kinks or those curls out. So women do this every 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes less, sometimes shouldn't be doing more.
Right.
And so formaldehyde has come up, a bunch of other chemicals that I can't pronounce, so I'll just use the term carcinogen.
Okay.
The study that Andy is referring to, and these are scientific studies.
Right.
And the big one that the National Institute of Health did in 2022 showed that women, and they followed women, thousands of women for years.
Yeah.
And it said that you are more likely to get types of cancers if you had been using these products. Mm. And so some of those products are ones that were based here in Chicago at some time.
Yeah, there's a local significance here.
Yeah, Dark and Lovely, just for me.
Yeah, headquartered here.
So these brands are very familiar, and Chicago was the epicenter for not just relaxers, but Soft Sheen was Black-owned, Johnson products. Yeah. All of these were Southside companies. Luster was here. Namaste is here. So just pointed that out, that Chicago for a long time before these Black families sold to multinational companies, you just go on 87th Street.
And it was all right here.
And it was here.
Wow. How many more people are expected to join in this federal suit, Andy?
Well, as you mentioned at the top, you know, 9 out of 10 Black women have used these products.
Right.
And then something like 2/3 of those women use them for a decade or longer.
Yeah.
So the pool of, I've been told that for every case that's been filed now, there's dozens or hundreds more.
It's like never ending.
Yeah.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Why don't we hear from one woman who filed a lawsuit in Cook County? Tracy Love's a former Oak Park police officer and longtime user of home hair relaxing products. Welcome to Reset, Tracy.
Hi, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
When did you first start chemically relaxing your hair?
I was 17 years old.
You waited a while.
I did, because my mother would not allow me to get a perm. And it was also a huge topic of discussion in my household. And I begged and begged for perms. I had friends who had perms, relaxers, and I'm like, oh, I want one. I was tired of every day my mom straightening my hair with a hot comb, and I had just gotten so used to it. But yeah, she would not allow me to do it. So when I graduated high school and I was going to college, I'm like, oh, I'm getting a perm. And my mom's like, oh, sure. Yeah, all right, let's do it. And my first experience was terrible. The first time I went to get a perm, my hair completely all fell out in the washing bowl.
Wow.
On the first application. And it was because I didn't know that you couldn't mix the perm in with a fresh hair dye. So my mother did allow me to dye my hair. I had like a burgundy color, like streaks. And
you can't put those two chemicals together. There's a period of time that you have to wait.
Yes.
if you are coloring your hair.
Right. And sat down, the beautician put the relaxer in, washed it out. Clumps of my hair came out. And so that was my first experience. And you would think that that's enough for me to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, you're not alone. Culturally, we have always known about certain like surface level risks of using mm-hmm. relaxers, right? I always knew about the potential for it to burn my scalp. It would burn my scalp sometimes, you know, if we scratched our scalps, if they were itchy, mm-hmm. you know, that particular irritated area, if the cream is on there for too long, it burns you, then you get a scab that you're left with for a week or so running around town. But when did you first notice symptoms of something much more serious than that?
So wait until my 30s. So I was probably about 30 years old when I started having very severe menstrual cycles. And, you know, I talked to my friends about their cycles, and some of them had like pain, but they were talking more so of what seemed to be kind of normal type of pain or discomfort, whereas mine was like pretty significant, very heavy periods. And I would speak to my doctors about it, and they're like, oh, well, you know, you're getting older. Of course, your cycles are going to change. You know, this is just something that you're experiencing, but it's fine. And then maybe about a year or so after, I was told that I had precancerous cells, so that I needed to have more frequent pap smears than what people would normally experience. And
right.
So I'm like, okay. I thought that was scary, but, you know, they said it's nothing to be concerned about right now. You just, you know, it's just something that we want to keep an eye on for a while. Okay. And then fast forward, my cycles had become so excruciating to the point where the way that I would describe it, I felt like someone took my ovary and twisted it like it was a balloon, like ready for it to pop.
Goodness.
It was so horrible, like debilitating. And I would take 1,000 milligrams of ibuprofen every 4 hours. And so I'm talking to my doctor like, okay, finally they're going to see that this is not normal. Like, this is crazy.
At this point, had you linked this to the relaxers?
No, not at all. Nothing. And so the doctor said, well, no, it's not normal, but we don't know what it is. Like, sorry. They said 1,000 milligrams of ibuprofen is way too much, but they wouldn't really give me an alternative.
Yeah. You know?
So fast forward, I went to so many doctors about what was going on with me. And finally, I had a doctor tell me that she was going to do an ultrasound. Did an ultrasound, and they saw that I had multiple fibroids, pretty big ones. One was like in the lining of my uterus near my ovaries, and they thought that that was the one causing the pain that I was experiencing. And they told me that I had a uterus size of a 4-month pregnancy, right? And I was not pregnant, so but the size of a 4-month pregnancy.
Oh my gosh!
And anyway, ultimately, fast forward, I ended up finding a doctor. Very lucky to find her, and she suggested a hysterectomy because there was no fixing anything. And
My goodness.
So I had a hysterectomy when I was 38.
What a journey. Mm-hmm. Andy, how have the companies that produce these relaxers been responding to allegations like Tracy's and others?
Well, you know, as we were talking about the research, there's been a lot of research done on different chemicals that are found in these products, and that's going back to the 90s, that linking them to increased, you know, more aggressive tumor growth, that sort of thing. And, you know, what they point to in the specific study that came out in 2022 about uterine cancer, where there's this really high differential between women who did and didn't use relaxers and their rates of uterine cancer, they point out that the study didn't, you know, point a finger at any particular chemical or any particular source of the within the products, just that the products' use and the rate of uterine cancer were linked. So they're leaning into the a correlation does not equal causation. And there will be a lot more research done. You know, the attorneys that are working on these cases will probably, you know, fund some expert research. And by the time these cases go to trial, which might be in 10 years, there may be a whole new body of research out there.
What do you want to say, Tracy, to other women listening right now? Because as we've pointed out, this is pretty much like a rite of passage as a young Black girl, right? And it lasts almost all of our lives. Do you think they should stop using relaxers?
Well, I can speak for myself. I will not be using relaxers anymore. I was speaking with Andy during our initial interview for the Sun-Times. And at that time, I thought when this lawsuit had kind of surfaced that, oh, okay, these companies now know that there's this correlation between fibroids and uterine cancer, that they've now taken the product, they revamped it, they took out what was harmful, and now they're putting them back on the shelves, is what I assumed. And he's like, yeah, no.
That's not the case. Not the case at all.
And I think it's pretty insulting. And I've heard other women speak about, like, well, you know, the damage is already done. Like, I don't have my uterus anymore. Like, it's gone for me. So then it's just like, well, what more can it do? I don't want to find out what more it can do.
That's scary.
Yeah.
To that end, Natalie, we know that we've had conversations in the culture just about changing course, right? You yourself, you no longer use straightening relaxers, right?
No.
You wear your hair in its natural state.
I mean, I'd straighten it with a blow dryer, but I haven't had a relaxer.
You do what's called a silk press.
I'm like, when did that term come about?
I don't know.
Side story. I stopped getting a relaxer in 2007.
Are others you know doing the same?
I would say there has been a movement. I don't plan to give my daughter a relaxer, my 3 stepchildren.
I haven't yet with my 2.
Don't. I think only one had at some point when she was little, but the look now with the younger generation, well, one, there's so many more products for natural hair that reduce frizziness. Like, the market is so different than when we were coming up. Secondly, these girls like braids. They like lace fronts.
They do.
They like cornrows. So they're wearing their hair different. They're not doing the...
Yeah, a lot of protective styles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So they're not doing the straight look, whether that's from a relaxer or... I mean, not all. I mean, I'm generalizing. But if you look at younger women...
Yeah.
It's not the same rites of passage as it once was.
That weird desire that we had back in the day to like make it, you know, super bone straight, mm-hmm. right? It's just not there anymore. Not you know, not on a large front.
Or on a wig.
On a wig. Leave us with this, Andy. I mean, you report that it's been almost 2 years since the first federal lawsuit on this issue was filed, and lawyers are still in the early stages of negotiating evidence. How long is the road ahead here?
You know, as I said, everybody I've talked to said, it's still very early in the process. We don't, for example, have discovery. You know, they're still haggling over getting the information out. So we don't necessarily know the formulas that these different products used and what periods of time. We don't know what the companies knew about what was in the products and what the health effects could be. So, you know, we are probably, you're probably familiar with litigation around talcum powder, mm-hmm. Johnson & Johnson. The first cases there were filed more than a decade ago, and they're just going to trial in the last couple of years.
Tracy, and I'll just add,
long road ahead.
I'll just add quickly that the FDA has gotten involved because there's been pressure for them to put warning labels on here. So,
like cigarettes.
Exactly. So there is a rule that's been proposed. So I think that's part of this, that if women or individuals choose to do this, what kind of warning is there so they know? Where someone like Tracy, when you don't have those warnings, you're not as informed.
Right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Natalie Moore is the Race, Class, and Communities editor here at WBEZ. Andy Grimm's a reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Tracy Love is a former Oak Park police officer. Now, for more on this topic, some of you may have heard the first part of Natalie's story this morning on Morning Edition. Part two airs tomorrow. Thank you all.
And that's Andy tomorrow.
Hey, Andy.
Not just me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Brenda Ruiz and edited by Meha Ahmed. To hear more conversations about health, head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Talk to you tomorrow.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.